Good Monday morning. It is Kale and Company live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Thanks for being with us today. It's going to be a beautiful Monday. Get outside and enjoy this nice spring weather. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Northeast Delta Dental, with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. You can learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. It was a busy weekend all the way around, and all kinds of things going on. But locally, in case you might have missed it, the NFL draft, of course, is a three-day event now. And on day number three, University of New Hampshire running back Dylan Lobby was drafted in the sixth round by the Las Vegas Raiders. Congratulations to Dylan. And he was the 208th player taken overall and the first UNH Wildcat to be selected in the NFL draft since the defensive tackle Jared Smith was chosen by the Seattle Seahawks in 2013. So hopefully he will be able to make that Las Vegas Raiders squad. He's a terrific running back, a great receiver out of the backfield. Some are projecting that he could play special teams for the Raiders in addition to other duties out of the backfield. So congratulations to Dylan Lobby out of the University of New Hampshire. Let's hope we see another Wildcat in the NFL starting this coming September. And there was also news out of the draft. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell hinted at the possibility down the road, not next season, but in the not-too-distant future, of maybe 18 regular season NFL games instead of the current 17, which would extend the season another week. And guess what, folks? Here's the biggest thing as far as I'm concerned. One that I think has made a lot of sense for years, but never acted upon by the NFL, and that is to play the Super Bowl on the Sunday of President's Day weekend. What an idea, huh? What an idea. Because, I mean, the absentee rate, apparently, I have never experienced it. I've usually worked in a place with not too many employees, you know, really. You know, people show up the day after the Super Bowl, as they are expected to. But I understand it. A number of businesses around the country, maybe around the free world, there's a huge rate of absenteeism on Mondays following the Super Bowl. So there you go. They might finally, and I think it's a great idea on all fronts. I mean, for, you know, youngsters to be able to stay up, especially on the East Coast, and see the entire Super Bowl if they choose to do so. And, you know, they don't have to go to bed early. I mean, out on the West Coast, it's really not that much of an issue because it starts 3 hours earlier than it does here. But give school kids a chance to stay up and watch the Super Bowl and not have to go to school the next day. So I think whether they go to an 18-game schedule or not, and I don't think the players are going to be too thrilled about that, but they could extend the season another week, perhaps give the teams an extra bye week during the course of the season to stretch it out a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with these proposals by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. So that's what's going on the football front. And, of course, the Celtics still embroiled in their playoffs. They're only in the first round. But tonight, they will be back at South Beach to take on the Miami Heat, a team they beat by 20 points on Saturday evening in the sun and fun capital of the world. We'll see if the Celtics come out with the same kind of energy tonight as they did on Saturday, having spent a full Saturday night and Sunday in Miami, which can sometimes be difficult on the body, I'm told, anyway. So Celtics tonight, they lead the series 2-1. Toronto on Saturday. Bruins beat the Maple Leafs 3-1. Bees lead the series 3-1 with Game 5 coming up tomorrow night. And they'll be back at the Garden with a chance to wrap it up, and I think they will. And let's see who will be between the pipes tomorrow night for the Bees. We'll talk more about this with John Leahy in just a few minutes. Head coach Jim Montgomery said, or indicated anyway, that he was going to go with the platoon goaltender system, which got the Bruins into the playoffs and got them a very, very good regular season record. But he deviated from that Saturday, used Jeremy Swayman in back-to-back games. Bees won, so we'll see who will be between the pipes tomorrow night at the TD Garden. Red Sox made it 2 out of 3 last night over the Cubs. Hey, did anybody have difficulty, or was it just me? I don't think so. I have a feeling it wasn't just me. But trying to watch the game last night on ESPN, on Comcast Cable, channel 849, it was all pixelated. It just didn't come in. The game on ESPN last night was a mess. You couldn't see it. You couldn't hear it. I had to go to my iPad and watch the game on my iPad last night. Did anybody else have that issue with the pixelation, I guess, factor on channel 849? I don't know. I don't think it was just me, because it was both TVs and I'm glad I have the app to see the channels on the iPad. So I got to see it that way. But I just wanted to mention that to see if there was anybody else out there that had trouble with that pixelation last night. And it wasn't just ESPN. There were other high-def stations that weren't working well. TNT with the basketball game last night worked fine. That was at 8:33 on the TV dial. I don't think you refer to it that way these days, but, 8:33 on your cable. In the Concord area anyway, and I think in the Manchester area as well. But anyway, I thought, it was interesting that the pixelation problem has existed for a while. It comes and goes. It comes and goes, folks, like karma chameleon. But anyway, I know it was a busy weekend for Andrew Gibson. Andrew, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And your great show at the Scenic Playhouse in Pittsfield, Getting Away with Murder, went well.
Yep. We had good crowds both nights, and people seemed to enjoy it and have a good time. And yeah,
well, that
overall,
is
overall received well.
That is great news. But the better news for our listeners who did not get an opportunity to see it over the weekend, including myself, Getting Away with Murder has one more weekend and 3 more shows.
Yep,
correct.
Yep. So we have Friday and Saturday night. At 7:30 start time, house opens at 6:30, and then we have Sunday, I believe, at 2.
Well, there you go. 3 more opportunities, and as we said, good crowds over the weekend. Andrew mentioned the good crowds over the weekend, and the tickets are still available for this coming weekend, but going rapidly after the, people, spread the word with, word of mouth. And I would imagine that as good as the crowds were this weekend, they'll be even better next weekend. So get your tickets in advance, pittsfieldplayers.org. And I think there are tickets available for all 3 of the performances, but do it as quickly as possible. And then yesterday, Andrew, I know you attended New Hampshire Opera Idol at the Bank of New Hampshire stage in the Canton in the Canton Club.
Canton Room, yep. Yep. Yeah, it was a good time. We had the finalists all performed very well. Everybody seemed to enjoy themselves. And yeah, it was a very good event.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And congratulations to all who participated, and for WKXL sponsoring the event, along with Concord TV and the New Hampshire Writers Project. Congratulations to all who took part, and to you who attended the event as well. We appreciate that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we shall return with John Leahy, who has a big announcement to make right here at WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on a Monday, and great to have back on the program after a week hiatus. It's our good friend, John Leahy. John, welcome back.
Ken, good morning. Thanks so much. Great to talk with you this morning, as always.
Well, always a pleasure to have John Leahy on the show. And before we get started talking a little bit about sports, we do want to mention that May Day takes on a couple of new meanings this year in the area. I mean, first of all, the Patriots drafted a quarterback in the first round, Drake May, out of North Carolina. So, you know, May Day is coming along in just a couple of days. But more importantly, May Day will mean the arrival of John Leahy in the capital city to perform at the Bank of New Hampshire stage open mic night this Wednesday. And John, I don't think there's any snow in the forecast for Wednesday.
Well, we hope not, but you know, if there is, we'll navigate through it. It's worth anything to come on up to New Hampshire and play.
So John was supposed to be here last month, but of course we had that that storm in the early part of April, and John wasn't able to make it, and coming a long distance and being flown in at no expense. But we are happy to say that John will be entertaining the masses and bringing down the house on Wednesday night at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. Now, John, I know you don't reveal your set list before you perform, but people should get there early to get a good seat. And I know you've played there once before. And it is just a great venue. I mean, the WKXL had an event in the Canton Room at the Bank of New Hampshire stage, New Hampshire Opera Idol, yesterday. But that's a great stage, isn't it? I think you said to me one time that when you were on that stage, you felt like you were playing at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, exactly. And I probably will never play at the Grand Ole Opry, but this might be the next closest thing. It's a great stage. It's you're out actually facing a balcony, and there are people up in that balcony enjoying the music. And I found that when I played there last time, the audience was very receptive, and I like that. So I'm looking for more of the same on Wednesday night, and I am working on the song. But, you know, as you said, I don't like to talk about the set before I do it because I want the surprise element to be there.
So absolutely.
The songs are continuing to be worked out.
Well, and I know you will put on a great show. I know it's limited to a certain number of songs, but it'll be great, and we're looking forward to it. I know some of your closest friends are going to be there as well, so that's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I enjoy coming up to New Hampshire, and I love seeing the normal crew that goes up there, and it'll be a great night, and I'm looking forward to making the trip north.
All right, and we're looking forward to having you back in the capital city, and I believe it all begins at 7, is that right? I think the selection process begins at 6:30, and the music itself at 7, is that correct?
That sounds right, Ken.
Yeah, all right.
You know, it is kind of a different, unique perspective there. You're among other players that want to play, and it is a selection process, so... we'll keep our fingers crossed that all goes well, and I'm planning on playing Wednesday night.
All right, there you go, John Leahy, Wednesday night at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. Excuse me, in downtown Concord, and John will be there, and there'll be other very talented musicians as well on hand. So it'll be a great night of music. Get out and enjoy at a great venue in. Downtown Concord. Let's talk a little hockey, John. And, of course, the Bruins are on the brink of clinching their first-round playoff series with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Coach Jim Montgomery said, or indicated at one time, that he might stick with his platoon system that got him through the regular season. Of course, the Bees had a very good regular season this year, as they did last year with the platoon system. But he broke away from that on Saturday night, starting Jeremy Swayman in goal and the Bruins' 3-1 win over Toronto. Were you surprised at all that he did that?
You know, yes and no. I think Swayman certainly has earned the opportunity to continue. I think he's been terrific, particularly the two games up in Toronto. The Bruins were able to really shut that Maple Leaf offense down. You know, it's kind of the problem you have, right? It's a good problem to have when you have two goaltenders that can carry the load. I'm sure Omark, Linus Omark, is happy with the decision because he knows that he's ready to play at any time. And two outstanding goaltenders in Jim Montgomery's arsenal. So, you know, you got to stick with what's working. And I think right now Swayman is working. And, you know, if there's any problems in Game 5, for example, Montgomery certainly wouldn't hesitate to come back to Allmark. So,
I'm assuming that Swayman will be starting tomorrow night in Game 5.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, you got to go with the hot hand. And, of course, you're open to criticism if it doesn't work, like, that's what happened last year. Montgomery abandoned the rotating approach, and he was second-guessed for that. But, again, I think you have to go with the hot hand, and I think I'd be surprised not to see Swayman in there.
Yeah, at this point, I would be, too. I think everybody would be. But it's not as if, and I know the Bruins lost Game 2, the only game that Ullmark has played in this series. But it's not as if it was his fault. I thought he played extremely well in that game.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think goaltending has been a problem, certainly in this series. But you're right, Ken. I thought Omar did play very well. And, you know, Toronto did escape with that second game. But, you know, I think the Bruins are the better team, and I think they're going to finish the Leafs off tomorrow night. They'll have the home crowd behind them. And, you know, I think that it certainly will be a competitive game, but I like the Bruins in this one to move on and most likely take on the Florida Panthers in a rematch of last year's game.
Yeah, and that will not be an easy task whatsoever. But at any rate, glad the Bruins are where they are right now, up 3-1. And as you say, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, I guess, to have two outstanding goaltenders because, you know, one of them, even though they, you know, I seemingly are very good friends, they always hug each other after victories, no matter who's in goal, whether it be Swayman or Ullmark. But, you know, they both want to play, regardless of, you know, what they might say. Oh, it's good. I mean, he's great and all that stuff. You know, they each want to play, so, and they're both very talented. I guess it's a good situation to have, but again, it's really a dilemma for a coach. So, you know, but Brad Marchand, John, you know, he had been in kind of a slump in his previous 27 games Brad Marsh, and up until the third game of this series, had scored just 3 goals in his last 27 games. And had been kind of in a slump, kind of in a funk, really, I thought. But boy, he's broken out of that.
Yeah, what do they say? It only takes one game to get out of a bad slump. And I think Marchand is kind of putting this Bruins team on his back. And the Maple Leafs certainly aren't a big fan of Marchand, but you know, you have to appreciate what the man has done. And he's put the team on his back, and he is the captain of this team, and he's sort of seeing to it personally, Ken. So we'll get by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So you got to appreciate what he's done.
The captain has stepped up big time, and now he has become the top Bruins goal scorer of all time in postseason history. How about that?
Yeah, he passed Cam Neely.
Yeah, and passed his boss. I wonder how his boss feels about that.
He feels good about it if the Bruins win. And that's,
right.
That's what now. And then you got to look at the bigger picture, but. Yeah, it's a testament to his longevity and his dedication to helping the Bruins win, and I'm happy for him, and you know, hopefully he can continue that good streak when they get back to the Garden tomorrow night.
Well, I think the little ball of hate will be fired up tomorrow night once again to eliminate those Maple Leafs and move on in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and John Leahy will be looking forward to seeing you in Concord on Wednesday night. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And, you know, for any listeners that want to stop by the Bank of America stage Wednesday night, we'd love to see you all. And I promise I will make it worth your while.
You always do. John Leahy, thanks so much.
Ken, thanks. Have a great week.
You too. And we'll see you Wednesday at the Bank of New Hampshire stage. We'll take a break, and then we'll talk about something completely different. New book entitled Cracking the Nazi Code. Very intriguing book, and we'll be chatting about that momentarily right here as we continue. Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. It is Kale and Company Live here on WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And I believe we're going to go across the border and into Canada this morning and welcome Jason Bell to the program. Jason, how are you today?
Doing fantastic. How about yourself, Ken?
I'm doing very well. Where are you in Canada?
I'm calling to you from the east coast of Canada, Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Ah, Fredericton. Ah, very good. And a good hockey country up there. I know they used to have an American Hockey League team in Fredericton, and been to New Brunswick on a number of occasions doing hockey in St. John, as a matter of fact. But Jason Bell is the author of Cracking the Nazi Code, The Untold Story of Agent A-12 and the Solution of the Holocaust Code. And Jason, welcome to the show. We're so pleased to have you with us. The book, I understand, is going to be officially released tomorrow. Is that right?
That's correct. April 30th.
April 30th. And it's already been read by a number of people, and the reviews have been excellent. Let me read you one before we get started. And this one is from Library Journal. A remarkable account of the life of Winthrop Bell, who lived from 1884 to 1965, a spy also known as A-12, who uncovered the emerging Nazi conspiracy. The book vividly documents the spy's efforts to alert the British of Nazi plans, a gripping account of the spy, who was also an academic at Harvard and McGill, an extraordinary story of one man's efforts to stop the Nazi regime. And Jason, I know that you and Winthrop Bell are not related, but how did you first come across Winthrop Bell? How did he come to your attention?
About 15 years ago, I was in Germany doing research in philosophy, and I was looking for the relations between Massachusetts pragmatism and German phenomenology. They seemed to me to be similar. I hadn't found a link between them, so I went to Germany And I was going through some dusty archives, and I found a dissertation written a century ago by Winthrop Bell that connected the two philosophical movements. That dissertation was missing two pages. I found that they were being housed in New Brunswick, but under restriction. I asked for those restrictions to be lifted. They were lifted after the university checked with Britain's Foreign Office to confirm they could be declassified, and that's when I found this remarkable story.
Now, you were the first scholar to actually see the classified espionage papers, and your access to them was exclusive. How were you able to gain that?
Sure. Well, the papers were under restriction, and many papers are like this. So the governments will hold them under restriction. They're not going to usually look at them, but if a scholar asks for them to be declassified, the authorities go in and look at them and see if they are declassifiable. So that's what happened in this case. They were still scheduled at that point to be under classification for several more years, but when I put in the request, the university checked with Britain's Foreign Office, confirmed it was at that point okay. They lifted the restrictions, and I was able to go in and look at them.
This is an amazing story, and how did Winthrop Bell end up becoming an M16 spy?
Well, he was a student in Germany, so he was getting his doctorate in philosophy under the famous phenomenologist Edmund Husserl in 1914 when World War I broke out. Canadians at that time were British subjects, so when Britain entered the war, he was arrested and thrown into prison. So when he was in prison, he was able to keep up with his German. His German was excellent, but perhaps as importantly or even more importantly, some of his friends from his student days at the University of Göttingen were famous mathematicians and physicists. They were recruited into German military intelligence during World War I. They were Winthrop's close friends, and so they continued to meet with him while he was in prison near Berlin at a former horse racing track for the British prisoners. They were apprising him of the situation, letting him know what was going on with the revolutionary movements in Germany. So when the war ended and he went back to London, he had an extraordinarily privileged perspective on the internal military situation in Germany. He knew secrets that most Germans would not have known. And so he was the best prepared in the English-speaking world to be able to speak to Germany's situation at a time when the country was divided. There was a civil war going on, and so MI6 quickly hired him on because of his excellent connections within the German military intelligence apparatus.
So what were some of the Nazi plans that he first uncovered?
So his very first report in 1918 said that a group of race warriors had taken over the country of Germany towards the latter half of World War One, and they were waging World War One as a race war. When the war ended, that group fled into neutral countries like Sweden. He said they were marginalized, but they were trying to take power again. Early 1919 is when they came together as National Socialism, what we now call the Nazis. And so his reports back to British secret intelligence agencies in April 1919 said that this group had formed. They were planning another war of revenge against the West, also against Jews and Slavs. And throughout the summer of that year of 1919, he described this propaganda that was appearing, attacking Jews. And then late in the summer, he was describing how physical attacks had begun on Jews throughout Germany. And then almost as soon as it began, the movement went underground. So there was a formation period in which the group figured out how to seize the levers of power. By the end of 1919, Winthrop Bell warned MI6 in Britain that this Nazi group was strong enough to take over the country anytime that it wanted. But he said that these military leaders who ran the movement knew that they weren't powerful enough to fight a world war quite yet. So they were going to wait, rearm, train youth, children, to be able to fight the next war because the current fighting age generation was sick of war, didn't want to have anything to do with it. He said it was going to take a generation before they could launch their war of revenge. So in other words, about 20 years. And he described all this in 1919. So this was several months before Adolf Hitler joined the movement. So Hitler was, in fact, a kind of a minor functionary at first. The movement, the Nazi movement, was formed and supported by far more powerful people than Adolf Hitler in early 1919.
Now, as I understand it, Bell's alerts were suppressed by a pair of very powerful politicians, and despite that, some of them got through.
That's right. So there were kind of a couple things going on. So MI6, then as now, Britain's secret intelligence agency, is housed within the Foreign Office. So they're subservient in ways to the Foreign Office, but they also have their own ways of getting intelligence out. And so Bell had, throughout the summer of 1919, he was working undercover as a Reuters journalist. And so his reports were getting out describing this anti-Semitic conspiracy. Towards the end of 1919, he wrote a book that he meant to be published and go to the public, to legislative leaders. And that report, as you said, was blocked by powerful British politicians. But MI6 had other ways of getting information out. And so his reports went to the press, but not in this comprehensive way that he had intended. So his book warning that was classified both described the Nazi movement and it had a plan to defeat them. And so what happened when that was classified instead is that different reports leaked out in the newspapers. Some were describing Germany's massive secret army. So this had something like a million men under arms as of the early part of 1920. Other reports warned against German anti-Semitism. They didn't come together in these press accounts the way that they had in his book. But still, it was enough to make people like Winston Churchill nervous. So Winston Churchill went before Parliament in early 1920 and warned the British people about this massive German secret army that was forming at the same moment that Britain's army was being decimated by post-war budgetary cutbacks. So that was really the beginning of British rearmament, was already in 1920. And in my book, I show how that owes a lot to Winter Bell's warnings. And of course, during the Nazi Blitzkrieg, everybody fell until the Nazis attacked Britain. And they were the first ones who were able to fight the Nazis to a standstill. If it had not been for Bell's warnings that let Britain rearm for a couple of decades, the war could have easily been lost.
Our guest is Jason Bell, author of the brand new book, which will be officially released tomorrow, Cracking the Nazi Code, The Untold Story of Agent A-12 and the Solving of the Holocaust Code. And Jason, can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
Absolutely.
We have to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. Kale and Company continues right here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and we will be right back. Welcome back. Kale and Company live here on WKXL for a Monday morning. And our guest is Jason Bell with a fascinating story of a Winthrop Bell, no relation. It's Cracking the Nazi Code, The Untold Story of Agent A-12 and the Solving of the Holocaust Code. And Jason, how did Winthrop Bell's intelligence, what he was able to garner, sabotage the Nazi war plan? And without it, do you think the Nazis would have won the war?
That's a fascinating question. So I'd say that the way that it began to sabotage the Nazis' war plan is in 1919, the Nazis were pretending that they were an anti-communist movement, and they weren't mentioning anything about their real purpose, which was to kill Jews and Slavs and other racial minorities. At that moment, the British were really keen to defeat communism. But they were undergoing budgetary cutbacks and slashing their military. So when these secret Nazis who were pretending to be conservative Germans approached the British, they were offering to defeat the communists on the cheap. And so Britain, throughout the early part of 1919, was actually funding this early Nazi movement unwittingly. They thought that they were funding anti-communists. And so Winthrop Bell's reports in the spring and the summer of 1919 were informing Britain that this was a lie, that this money that was going to fund these right-wing militias was not being used to fight communism at all. In fact, the communists, the Russian communists and these German racists had formed a quiet peace. So they'd actually formed a peace treaty through secret negotiations. They had turned the fighting, turned from fighting each other to attacking the local local populations in the east of Europe, even while they were lying to the British in order to continue securing funding. So Bell's warnings actually led to Britain cutting off funding to these right-wing groups, and it also prevented Britain from unwittingly supporting these racists in their summer 1919 plan to have a coup that would get rid of German democracy and replace it with their own military movement, which they were promising was going, again, to get rid of the communists. So that was an early blow to the Nazi movement. Also, his warnings were able to block an invasion of Eastern Europe that these German racists had concocted. So this was in the fall of 1919. They invaded Latvia and began slaughtering Jews in the east of Europe. Well over 100,000 Jews were killed at that point. The New York Times that year said that if this invasion succeeded, millions of Jews would die. Bell was able to get warning to MI6 before this attack happened. MI6 was able to alert the Royal Navy. They sent in warships, bombarded the German positions. And again, Bell blocked a Nazi attempted a takeover of Poland. So this was all in 1919. Mm. But towards the end of the year, he said that if this group were not annihilated, they would just keep on trying until they succeeded. And finally, he actually got sick of this. He quit MI6 because he saw that no matter how many times he played this whack-a-mole game, the Nazis were to keep on coming back, that without a comprehensive plan to undermine them, they would eventually fight the world war that they wanted to fight.
And then as World War II approached, Winthrop Bell became a spy once again. What was his contribution at that point in time?
So a couple of key contributions. So in 1934, this was the year that Hitler seized absolute power, Winthrop Bell went into Germany and met his key surviving source. So a lot of his other sources at that point had been killed by the Nazis or had fled the country. But one of his key sources, named Wilhelm Runge, was a key chief of the Nazi radar system, but Runge was secretly an anti-Nazi. The Nazis had basically, I shouldn't say the Nazis, this was German scientists, this was in a Nazi country. These German scientists had more or less invented radar. Runge and Bell were able to work on a plan to undermine the Nazi radar system in part by getting the secrets of how it worked out to the world. So this was absolutely crucial in Britain being able to win the Battle of Britain, and then subsequently the Allies being able to win World War II. Then in 1939, Winthrop Bell was the first to warn against Nazi plans for worldwide racial extermination. So Bell said the Nazis were going to start with the Jews, but they were going to continue to the Slavs, Blacks, Asians, the indigenous peoples of North America. According to Hitler's theory and that of his leading officers, only one race was going to ultimately survive. Either it was going to be the Aryans or somebody else. And so Hitler's plan was that all non-Aryan races had to be exterminated everywhere in the world in order to protect Aryan blood. So this was in the spring of 1939 that Winthrop Bell warned his intelligence sources about this. The next known intelligence warnings about Hitler's plans for the Holocaust did not appear until 1941, so 2 years later. And then in the fall of 1939, Bell's warnings appeared in a prominent Canadian newspaper. That was 3 years before the next warnings appeared in newspapers that Hitler was committing genocide.
Wow. Now, is it fair to compare Winthrop Bell with James Bond, 007?
Yeah, I think so. I oftentimes thought of Winston Powell as a combination of Indiana Jones and James Bond. So Indiana Jones, of course, is he's the professor who the Ivy League college who goes off and fights Nazis, and that was Winston Powell. So he taught at Harvard in the 1920s, and then came out of his academic duties to fight the Nazis. And in another way, he was like James Bond. So he had to be a suave, charming, sophisticated person in order to be able to wine and dine these high-ranking Germans who were his key sources. I would say the difference between Winston Powell and James Bond perhaps is that James Bond is famous as a seducer of women, and that was not at all Winston Powell's operation. He was a happily married man through much of his career, and did not have girlfriends. He was a steady, stable character, and people trusted him with their lives, and that's what made him such an effective espionage agent.
I guess so, and he certainly was that. It amazes me, Jason, that most people have never heard of Winthrop Bell. How could that be possible?
Well, there were two factors. So one was that his papers were under restriction. So this was a strict restriction. Nobody could get in until, as I mentioned, the restrictions had been lifted. And so this fascinating materials were simply being curated by archivists who were making sure the papers were kept safe. But historians and scholars could not get in. But the other part of it was Winthrop's own humility and caution. So he, after World War I, was offered a prominent honor by the British Empire called membership in the Order of the British Empire, and Winthrop turned that down. That would have been a prominent calling card he could have used for professional success or academic advancement, but he turned it down. He was a humble guy with part of it, and I think the other part of it was if he had accepted it, news of his acceptance would have ran in the papers, which would have blown his cover, and it could have compromised his sources. So Britain actually did that in other cases in 1919. They awarded people honors for fighting the Germans. Then when the Nazis took over in World War II, those intelligence networks were blown. They could not be reactivated because they'd been in the newspapers. So Bell, by keeping his head down and keeping quiet about it, was able to remain effective as an intelligence agent throughout World War II, and then throughout the Cold War. So Wilhelm Runge, who I mentioned earlier, became a key MI6 and CIA source during the Cold War, helping to infiltrate the behind the Iron Curtain.
Well, it's a fascinating book, and it will be officially released tomorrow. Jason Bell, you have done a miraculous job with this, and we appreciate you spending some time with us here this morning.
Thank you, Ken. It's a beautiful state you live in, and I'm happy to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. And again, the book is Cracking the Nazi Code, the Untold Story of Agent A-12 and the Solving of the Holocaust Code. Again, Jason, our thanks to you, and great to have you with us. And folks, great to have you with us today here on this Monday morning on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk a little baseball with Chris Hatfield of SoxProspects.com, and get a visit from our good friends at the New Hampshire Department of Motor Vehicles. We'll do that tomorrow, starting right after 8 o'clock. WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And don't forget, folks, to always look on the bright side of life. Thank you.